What are church elders responsible for? How can we build trust between pastors and elders? And how can we hold one another accountable? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled Pastors and Elders, Caring for the Church and One Another. You can check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Pastors and Elders by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Pastors and Elders. Welcome back to Issues Etc. People have been wondering politically why President Obama, why other members of his administration in an election year would be pushing the Health and Human Services mandate to require religious employers and insurers to pay for birth control, especially when you have a large block of Roman Catholic voters who are pivotal in every presidential election. Politically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Theologically, have people found a way of supporting the HHS birth control mandate? Joining us to talk about this, Dr. Martin Noland. He's pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, and author of a blog post for Brothers of John the Steadfast titled, The Conflict Over the HHS Regulations, It Is Theological. Marty, welcome back.
Good to be here.
I agree with you that I can't think of a rational political reason why someone would take on, at the very least, the Roman Catholic Church, and then Christians in general in the United States on this issue. But you say there are people who are, for other reasons, on the side of these HHS regulations. What have you discovered in your research?
There is a organization, I don't know how long it's been around. It's called Religious Institute, and you can go to Religious Institute, that's all one word, .org. And under their news section, they have a statement that's supported by them. I believe they wrote it, or a group of them. And it's titled, Major Mainstream Religious Leaders Support White House on Contraceptive Coverage and Healthcare Reform. And when they say that, they put the abortifacients and contraceptives together. They're not making a distinction. And they have a statement there about a paragraph long that stands with President Obama and Secretary Sebelius in their decision to reaffirm these contraceptive services as essential preventive care. I'm not saying that they originated, this group originated the statutes or regulations, but they are now supporting them. And if you look at the list, it's very interesting who is on that list. So it's not just the members of this religious institute, they're more like a think tank. It says their subheading is Faithful Voices on Sexuality and Religion, and it's evident that they support women's issues, women's liberation, and also gay and lesbian issues, too. The interesting thing is who is supporting this particular statement that is at that website. And there's four different groups. The first group would be church bodies or denominations. The second are institutions of theological education. The third are political action groups within denominational traditions, which may or may not, probably don't have official sanction or a vote of the church body that says, oh, you can do this for us. They're just a group within, let's say, the Presbyterians or Methodists. And finally, there's the not-for-profit organizations, including Planned Parenthood, that don't have any official religious connections. And these are ones that are supporting the woman's right for choice and those type of things. The first group, the main denominations there are the Unitarian Universalist Association and the United Church of Christ, and a couple of the liberal Jewish groups in the United States. And the second group is the Episcopal Divinity School of Cambridge, Massachusetts. So it's Episcopalian, it's their main institution, and the Union Theological Seminary in the city of New York, where I got my PhD.
It's odd that we have heard in the news coverage, the popular news coverage, since the HHS mandate kind of hit the press and there was some reaction, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Pastor Matthew Harrison, was among a group of religious leaders, professors, and Roman Catholic leaders who appeared in a committee hearing on Capitol Hill speaking against the mandate on the basis of religious freedom and freedom of conscience. But the news media has largely focused on that opposition, saying, well, look, you've got to be religious to oppose it. But we've heard nothing, I don't think anything, of this religious support for it. And very little kind of what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
Yeah, and I think that side needs to be said. And hopefully, as this comes out, see, when did they, supporting the statement on January 20th, you know, I noticed, too, that when I looked at this, it was an update. So even as I posted my article on the website for Brothers of John Steadfast, there were new people or new organizations that were signing on to this statement. So it's changing as we go. I think the real issue is, what's the theological issue here? We understand what the social political issue is. And for that, you've got to understand, well, I'm sure you do, Todd, but the hearers and the people of the United States need to understand what the social gospel is. And the social gospel goes back to the late 19th century in the United States, and it was the idea that Jesus came to help out the poor and oppressed. I put in my my web blog this quote from Shaler Matthews, who is one of the originators and great leaders of the social gospel movement. He was a professor at University of Chicago, Divinity School or whatever, but that's where he was. And he stated this: the great command which Jesus lays upon his followers is not to have their wrongs righted, but to right the wrongs of others. And then he goes on to state that to get justice for others, you need to compel the overprivileged, and justifies, therefore, the coercion of institutions and whatever in order to obtain this. Now, we can argue what is, you know, rightful coercion. The law is a means of coercion. But the interesting thing is that the social gospel says is that this is why Jesus came, in order to bring about social justice in the world. And so people that preach the social gospel, or that is their theological position, Shaler Matthews says, it wasn't to have their wrongs righted, which is the forgiveness of sins, which Jesus did on the cross, but it's to bring about social justice and to level the playing field, to bring about perfect equality. I mean, that's basically what they're going for in all aspects of human life and society.
So is it safe to say that insofar as the religious entities that have penned their support for the HHS mandate believe in a social gospel, they believe that they have a divine mandate, really? I mean, I don't know how else to read what you've just said. A divine mandate to push things like this in society, even compulsory things like this, in civil society.
That's correct. I mean, and so then, if you understand their way of thinking about the social gospel, that Jesus said, we have to do this, we have to bring about equality and justice for everybody, and of course, they're the ones that are determining what that is, but that's what Christian religion is all about, then when you look at it from that standpoint, and then you see the status of women, where they get pregnant and they have to bear the cost or consequence of a sexual affair. The man can just walk away, especially in our society where, you know, divorce is free for all and there really is no compunction against the male at all. So women really do bear the cost, and so then the way to counteract that, to bring about justice or equity in their minds, is to have free access and also free, in other words, you don't have to pay for it. And then I think the other part of it that I didn't put in my article, but I also think is there, I knew when I was at Union Seminary that a lot of people there were really gung-ho against the Roman Catholic Church. And I didn't always quite understand that, because I thought the ecumenical movement was all about trying to bring about some sort of unity or fellowship or a happy coexistence with the Roman Catholic Church. And the students there, especially those involved in the feminist movement, were really against the Roman Catholic Church. And I finally understood that they kind of see the Roman Catholic Church, because it's all male clergy and it's got a hierarchy and it goes way back in their tradition, they see that as the source of oppression So I think they justify in their minds this form of coercion against the Roman Catholic Church because they think that the Catholics are the ones that have been doing this all along. They're really ones that should pay for it.
Do you? I mean, certainly you do notice the irony here, because if a conservative-minded Christian were to stand up and say, look, I think that it is my divinely mandated duty to use the tool of government to coerce my social goals on this country, they would be called, they would be accused of trying to inaugurate a theocracy. But isn't that
correct,
precisely what these liberal forces believe that they have a divine mandate to do?
Well, again, now you have to go back another step into the theological history of the social gospel. And that goes back to Schleiermacher, which is a famous German theologian of the early 19th century. And Schleiermacher talks about how the God's will, I'm putting this in really simple terms, but God's will becomes evident to communities of believers, not by studying the scriptures, although that might happen to inspire them, but as they get together and they talk and they pray, and it comes to them what God's will for them is. And he talks himself, Schleiermacher does, about social justice in his own way. So within the Schleiermacherian model of revelation, when a large community of, let's say, religious leaders that are pro-feminist, they get together and they talk and they say, hey, this is unjust, well, then God is speaking to them. This is the Schleiermacherian model of the community that gets together and realizes where injustice is, and then they have to act. So really, it does come out of a theological revelation or inspiration, if you will, if you know how the Schleiermacherian notion of revelation works and what the social gospel is all about. That, then it all makes sense.
That just explains a lot. That explains an awful lot. We'll talk more about the theological conflict behind the HHS birth control mandate. Dr. Martin Nolan is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 29th. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. 10 more minutes left in this hour. We're spending it talking with Dr. Martin Nolan about the theological conflict behind the HHS birth control mandate. You've heard a lot in the news about conservative religious forces fighting against the HHS mandate on the basis of religious liberty. What you have not heard about, what we're talking about during this half hour, is the liberal religious forces that more behind the scenes, less noticed by the media, have assembled in favor of the HHS birth control mandate. And our guest, Dr. Martin Nolan, says it has a lot to do with their view of the social gospel and how God continues to guide the church. It not only explains this particular thing, but it also explains the general leftward movement of mainline Protestant denominations, doesn't it, Marty?
Yeah, and that's... It's a sad thing that the churches are going this way because they lose their focus on what we're really all about, which is the gospel of Jesus Christ and the salvation of sinners. And you could see from that quote from Shaler Matthews, that's exactly the move that's being made. But I also have to say that this was prepared by the general trend of Reformed or Calvinist theology, which sees just as equally important the making of a reformed society as well as a reformed church. And Lutherans have always seen the reforming of society as, well, that's what the princes do. That's what the government is for, and the church sticks to its goal. Whereas the Calvinists and the Reformed have typically said, no, that's also a role of the church. And so once the Protestants went in that direction, they just keep going that way, and generation after generation, they lose touch with the base, which is the salvation of through Jesus Christ. So you can't totally blame the liberals. The Calvinists started us on that way many centuries ago.
You say that this is a theological conflict at its heart when it comes with respect to the churches and religious organizations, and you say, with regard to the Christian church, the major theological conflict in the Christian church today. Explain.
When we went through the conflict in our own church body in the 1960s and 70s, the issue that was talked about mostly was the issue of biblical criticism. That is, higher biblical criticism in which anything that was historical in the Bible was doubted or rejected. And that was considered to be the main focus of liberal Protestant theology. Well, for liberal Protestants, that is kind of a side tool. It's biblical theology. But where liberal Protestant theologians are, and certainly in the United States today, is their concern is the social gospel. That is what it's all about. The higher criticism is for scholars. But the majority of pastors in those denominations committed to this, and definitely, you know, you can see the Episcopalian divinity schools in there, so they definitely are committed to that. United Church of Christ, Unitarian Universalists, those are three that have signed on to this statement in support of HHS. So they're clearly, others are kind of, their leaders are, but maybe not all the members. And so the this is what they're all about. And so then, if that's what you're all about, then what happened to the gospel that Jesus proclaimed and why he came on earth to suffer and die for the sins of the world? That gets it gets on the back burner. It gets put into a closet. It's forgotten about completely in many of those churches. And so then what the church is all about changes. And anybody that goes to these churches and hears one of the preachers that are dedicated to the social gospel will say, that's not the gospel I know. And that's what St. Paul said about another gospel, that you shouldn't listen to them. And there's no harmonizing between the two.
Why have the goals of the sexual revolution and the feminist movement become the primary goals, at least at this point, in the social gospel movement in the United States?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure I have, because it's too new. Historians look at things that they've happened in the past, and you gather all the data. I think that one of the big reasons this has happened is because women's ordination, and that the women that were attracted into the ministry in those denominations that accepted women's ordination were the same women that were really committed to a feminist cause. And once they got into the position and then they learned this social gospel theology from the inside out, they learned how to use it and apply it for their own interests. So I think that's the main reason that is, because that's a new phenomena. The ordination of women in the United States doesn't go back before the 1960s, I believe. And now you have bishops that are, and well, what is it, the Archbishop Shorey of the Episcopal Church is now a woman. So that's all very new, and I think while we're seeing this type of stuff is precisely because of the women's ordination issue. And those denominations or traditions that did not accept women's ordination typically do not support these things.
Can we say, now this does not touch upon the subject we've been discussing directly, but I would say by inference, can we also conclude that there may be a similar theological support behind the homosexual agenda in the United States?
That's a little bit more difficult to determine. My knowledge of from talking for 4 years with students at Union Theological Seminary, there are definitely students that are committed to women's ordination and that are ordained women themselves and are definitely against the gay agenda. But there are also students in there that are pro-gay agenda. So there is a joining of forces, and the more radical women feminists in those denominations see the advent of the ordination of gays, which some of those denominations are doing now, as a way to get more people into their circle that agrees with what they're doing. And I think you can see that in the ELCA with their decisions in 2009.
You write, Marty, when the government mandates this, that is, this kind of coerced obedience to the government on issues that violate conscience, from religious institutions and coerces religious institutions, it is taking sides in a religious conflict. Explain what you mean.
Well, again, I think it's that these particular issues in the way they're being being talked about and being forced upon the churches, it is a theological conflict. Certainly it has also now become a political conflict. But from the standpoint of those that are advocating it and pushing it, and their reasons for doing it, those are personally and as institutions, they're theological. And this statement that was published at Religious Institute that I talked about at the beginning of this half hour definitely shows this is a theological position. Religious leaders are supporting that. And so that's the reason why I came to that conclusion.
Someone might say, well, the answer is to fight fire with fire. We conservative Christians need to organize religious PACs. We need to get together and do what the left side is doing here. And we should be pushing our agenda coercively through the tool of the government on society and let the best man win. Is that a good solution?
No, I don't think it is. I think we, as Lutherans, we have to learn how to work with both feet at the same time. And with our right foot, that is within our own church and our own church body and those that accept our theological foundations, we talk and argue on the basis of the scriptures and the confessions. In the area of the public realm or the public square, we operate with reason and natural law and the law that exists in the country as it is. And I think it's a mistake to join together with people on a religious basis. And I think you'll find that you have a lot more support with people, whether they're religious or not, if you talk about things simply on a common sense basis. And I think the issue that the women are bringing up is true in the sense that when there's a sexual relationship between men and women, there's an inequality. The woman gets stuck with the consequence. But God's answer for that is marriage. And the man ends up paying for it. He has to go to work and support the wife and the kids. That's God's plan. And if you go outside of that plan, then you're going to have all sorts of problems, and that's what people are trying to answer. So, but I think the way that we should answer it is through a natural law or common sense approach, and people are doing that. I read First Things all the time. I listen to Issues, etc., and that helps me be informed on those good ways of doing it.
Dr. Martin Nolan is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, author of a blog post for Brothers of John the Steadfast titled "The Conflict Over the HHS Regulations." It is theological. You'll find a link to this blog post under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Marty, it's always a pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., We're going to be spending some time with Susan Mobley. She's Associate Professor of History at Concordia University, Wisconsin. She has written a chapter in the book Learning at the Foot of the Cross, and her chapter is titled Historical Foundations in the Lutheran Reformation. The Reformation not only spurred great educational reforms and jumps forward, but it was also the product of a educational revolution that was already underway. And we'll talk about how education and the 16th century Reformation have been and remain intertwined with one another in hour two of Issues, Etc. Terry Mattingly will be our guest a little bit later in that hour. It was 30 years ago today that he was interviewing a 20-year-old singer named Bono. They weren't yet calling themselves U2. I think it was Bono and the Edge. And this interview that he had was, he has discovered, the first time that Bono spoke publicly about his Christian faith. Nowadays, we think of Bono, we think of Christian superstar, don't we? Not a Christian rock artist, but a rock artist who happens to be a Christian. We'll see what Terry has to say about the faith of U2's lead singer Bono in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.